the show that's focused on investing strategies for today's needs and tomorrow's goals. This is Bucket Strategy Investing, presented by the Wealth Advisors at Lucia Capital Group. Now, here are Johnny Dean and Rick the Professor Plum.
Yes, indeed. Great to have you with us, folks. We appreciate you being here. We're going to be taking your calls in just a moment, like 60 seconds or so. But we want to remind you, you're tuned into the Bucket Strategy Investing Program, all fired up and ready for yet another hour of the best in money information. Standing by to help you out, Professor Rick Plum joins me, Johnny Dean, as always, from Lucia Capital Group. And of course, as you might expect, whole lot of stuff to go over this hour once again. Things to talk about. But your chance to call in is right now. We have some folks on hold, but we still have two lines open. If you got a money or strategy question, or if you want to discuss your retirement options like we've been doing here today, we're here as your financial resource. You grab your phone, you give us a call at this number, 877-PLANNER. That's 877-752-6637. You can also send us your emails, your questions, your comments, whatever it is. You just go to wealthed.com, you click on the Find Your Answer link, type in your question, you send it to us, and we answer it. This is what we do on this program. We're also all about wealth education. That's what we try to provide every day on the show. So you should head over to wealthed.com, our website, to get all of our resources. There's another way to do it, too. You can contact the Brain Trust off the air right there at wealthed.com, where you got the opportunity to meet with a Brain Trust advisor and go over your individual situation. You should know what your options are. In fact, you should trust the Brain Trust network of advisors. They're all available to you through a single point of contact. You can call Professor Plum or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, which brings you this hour of the program. Their off-air number is 800-644-1150. 800-644-1150. The advisors at Lucia Capital Group will be happy to help you out and talk to you about any aspect of your retirement plan, help you put it together, and any questions that you have regarding whatever we talk about on the show. Again, 800-644-1150. Okay, going to take some calls. We got some people on hold, been waiting a little bit, so we're going to take care of everybody. Don't go away. 877-752-6637. We're going to start with Jim, who's been hanging on for a little while here in Avondale, Arizona, with a question or two. Hello, Jim.
Hello, how are you guys doing today?
Good, how are you doing?
Pretty good. I listen to your program all the time.
Thank you.
And I'm 64 years old. I've been drawing Social Security since I was 62. But I've been penalized because I'm making over $15,400. So I get paid for 6 months instead of the full 12 months.
Right.
But when you're 66, you can draw Social Security and not be penalized.
Correct.
And I don't know if I've ever heard or I've missed that program where you mentioned that about Social Security.
Right. It has to do with the retirement earnings test. And you're making more than, currently this year, it's $15,720. It goes up usually a little bit each year, so it's going to be a little bit more each year. And the year that you reach your full retirement age, you will have a different set of rules, and the threshold is a lot higher. How much?
Right.
So you're probably making in the 30,000 range or so right now?
Yeah, 40.
40. Well, the good news, what month is your birthday? What month do you?
January 2nd.
Well, that's not going to help you much. But
yeah,
the year that you turn 66, you know, since you turned 66 in the first month of the year, there will be no limits on what you can earn. So in 2001, is it 18? You can earn as much as you want. The retirement earnings test will not apply to you that year.
And it's the year, as you said. So if your birthday had been in December, you would have had the entire year.
Right, because he wasn't expecting. Now, in the year that you turn full retirement age, the threshold goes from $15,720 to close to $42,000. So as long as you make less than $42,000 for the year, and they only count the months of the year before your birth month, in your case, it doesn't help you at all because your birth month is January. So, you know, so for the next year, 2 years, you're going to continue to be subject to the earnings test, the retirement earnings test, where you lose $1 of benefit eligibility for every $2 of income over the stated threshold. Currently, stated threshold is $15,720. Now, you're losing about half of your benefit. So you're losing 6 months of your benefit, the way you stated it. And so when you do become eligible, either because you quit work or you hit 66, those months basically that you lost out on it, that they took back from you, are going to be treated as if you didn't get them. And so instead of being reduced all the way back to 62, you're going to not have as big of a reduction when the Social Security benefit starts up again. It's as if you didn't start receiving it as early as you did. So it's going to look more like a 63 and a half or so benefit, a 64 benefit, rather than a 62 benefit, because you're basically giving it back and not receiving half your benefits. So it will go up when you become 66 or when you quit working. But in the meantime, you are subject to this retirement income test. Now, the only thing go ahead.
I'm sorry.
The only thing that you're looking at is your earned income. This is not a taxation issue. And this commonly gets confused. The difference between the taxability of a Social Security benefit that I'm receiving and the eligibility for a Social Security benefit that I may receive if I'm still working.
It's just earned income in this
case. The only thing that's affecting your ability to get your full benefit is your current W-2 wages or self-employment income. But that goes away at 66. The ability or the taxation is with us forever. So you were going to say, though, something?
Yeah, the reason why I brought it up is if some people are really short of cash, for retirement. So when they turn 66, if they keep working and put in for Social Security, that Social Security will be extra income for them.
Oh, yeah, no, it helps a lot.
And they can put that away if they want to work until 70 for 4 years. That's almost $175,000 that they would be putting away to live on later.
For some people, it's about $120,000. But it also depends on how long the individual potentially may live. Because if all you're going to do is take it, pay some tax on it, and save it, it may be better off not taking it because the benefit grows by 8% a year anyway. And now, if you don't live that long after age 70, it doesn't make sense to defer taking it until 70 unless you have a spouse that'll live a long time. But if you're going to live a long time, it may be better to not take it and let it grow and then get the bigger benefit later.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, when I called Social Security, they told me, the reason why I'm drawing at 62 is because I've got a son that's under the age of 18.
Okay.
And he draws half my Social Security, but the way they calculate it is that they calculate his. See, I'm drawing $1,297 a month.
So he's getting about $800.
Yeah, and he's drawn $856. So his is calculated on my 66 Social Security.
As it should be.
Yeah, okay.
Now, and that's
why he was getting more than half of mine.
Well, yeah, he's getting the child benefit, the dependent benefit, is equal to 50% of your what they call PIA, primary insurance amount, basically your full retirement age benefit. And there is no reduction because of his age. Obviously, he's under age 18, so that would be a heck of a reduction if they were reducing it. But it's a 50%. It doesn't matter whether you started yours at 62 or age 70 or anywhere in between. His benefit is still the 50% of your full retirement age benefit. And so that's why he's getting more than half of what you're actually receiving. But you're taking it early makes a lot of sense because now you're getting a lot more money than just portion of your Social Security. So your decision was the right one.
Yep. Does that help you out, Jim?
I think we lost him, but he's doing the right thing.
Okay. All right. Jim, if you have any other questions, hold on. We'll be happy to talk to you more about this.
Now, the fact that he's losing part of his benefit means the son is losing part of his benefit, too. You can't, when you're under full retirement age, unlike the file and suspend that we've had for many years, even though it's going away, when you lose your benefit, anybody else that's drawing from your work record also loses a benefit. So he's getting the benefits, half of what he's actually receiving.
Yes.
He's got the same issue with the retirement earnings test. Dad's got the retirement earnings test. Anybody off of dad's record is going to have that same effect.
Exactly. It sort of follows all the way down the line. Okay, 877-PLANNER, our number. Let's see. We can get started at least with Maria, who's back in Renton, Washington. Hi, Maria.
Hi, I'm a long-time listener, and thank you for taking my call.
You bet.
I have about $70,000 in a 503B, I believe it is called.
403B?
Uh-huh. And I would like to move that money, which they say that I can because it's not tied up, to annuity, I guess. So my question is, should I move that money to a small annuity, for my retirement, or should I move it? I'm a state employee.
Mm-hmm.
So should I move that money to a deferred compensation program that the state has, which also allows at the end to buy some more credits for my retirement?
Well, how old are you right now?
I'm 57.
57. Yes. And you're still working for the company that allowed you to create this 403B, right?
No, that was back.
Okay, that's a different.
I was the university.
Okay. I just wanted to make sure that you were getting the correct advice. Now, what is it about the annuity that makes you want to buy an annuity?
Well, I wasn't, you know, I thought retirement was going to be on my next lifetime, I guess, so I didn't save enough. So I'm going to have a pension with the state, and I'm going to have Social Security, and I hope both, you know, going to be there when I retire. But so I'm thinking to try to have another source of income.
Okay. Well, that may be it. You're a little bit young for this, but we can get into this a little bit further.
Hang on a second, Marie. I got to take a break, so if you can hang on, please, we will talk to you more about this on the other side. I know Professor may have a couple more questions for you. Once again, it comes down to making a decision with regard to a pension. Do you take the annuity or the lump sum? She is a little young. She's 57. So we'll come back and talk about that. 877-PLANNER, our number. Still some lines open. Two lines open. 877-PLANNER. More questions answered when we come back on Bucket Strategy Investing. Answering your money questions here on the program, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. We got some workshops coming up still. We'll tell you more about those in just a little bit. Don't forget, though, you can meet the Brain Trust in person. We'll tell you how coming up shortly. In the meantime, you can give us a call with your questions. Get them answered right now on the program. I'm Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum here with me, the Brain Trust from Lucia Capital Group, talking to you about your money. 877-752-6637. We're going to go back to Maria in Renton, Washington, regarding the pension. Maria, are you still with us?
Yes, I am.
Okay, great. Professor Plum.
Yes, Maria, you said you had access to another type of retirement plan, 457 deferred compensation plan. Is that right? Maria?
Yes.
Do you have any money in that 457 deferred compensation plan right now, or is that something that you're just thinking about doing?
I'm just thinking about doing, you know. I mean, I'm either option A, you know, with an annuity, or option B with a 457, like you say, a deferred compensation with the state.
Yeah, so at this point, the only money you've saved, or all the money you've saved, is in this 403B, and the total of your portfolio is $70,000, right?
Right.
I don't like putting 100% of my portfolio or your portfolio into one investment. Now, I understand wanting to have more income, but you're going to have a nice pension, hopefully. You're going to have some Social Security. Hopefully, they won't be affected too much by each other. And having extra income really does come in handy. Is there something about the annuity? Are you being told that the annuity does something special for you, or that it's a great payout?
What are they telling you about the annuity? We're just curious, Maria.
Right. Well, they say, well, if you what you really want is income, you know,
right,
just another extra income, then the annuity is the proper vehicle to do it.
It is a vehicle. So, it's just that with 70,000, I don't like putting 100. Like I said, I don't like putting 100% of my portfolio into any one investment. And you're 57. You're going to work for another 6, 7, 8 years, right?
Oh, absolutely, 67 or 70. You know, that depends.
Okay. I think the annuity is a little premature. I would rather see you try to get some growth out of this, even if it's a moderate amount of growth balanced to portfolio, so that then you can 6, 7, 8 years from now do something else with the portfolio rather than what's available today in today's interest rate environment. Now, I know there's somebody back there who sells annuities saying, but she can get a 6 or 7% guarantee. No, you can't get a 6 or 7% guarantee. The income base may grow by 6 or 7%, but that's not a real rate of return.
But you're not a big fan of the annuity based on using as 100% of...
I don't want to use 100% of my portfolio into an annuity right now. I just don't think it makes sense given today's interest rates, today's world. Now, I think you would have a lot more flexibility, I think, over the next 6, 7... Using it for a deferred investment. Not the income yet, but a deferred investment, like like an index annuity, depending upon the cap rates, like one of the structured note things, investments that has better upside potential with some downside protection. I think that makes a lot more sense right now. That gives her, you know, the ability to let it grow for the next 7 to, you know, 8, 10 years, 12 years, and so between now and age 70. I think those make more sense because I think they'll give her a better income when she retires.
You understand
what's going on?
What he's saying here, Maria, I mean, does that make sense, or?
Yeah, because, you know, I'm concerned and doubtful. That's what I say. Well, you know, I'm a long-time listener. I'm going to ask these guys that they know more about, you know, about it. So you say it's an index. What type of an index?
Well, because you're also concerned about safety, so depending upon whether you want to have some safety net on it, and depending on how much of a safety net you want on it, if you wanted to use an index annuity, but that has like a 3 or 4% potential rate of return, you could use a structured product that has a 6 or 7% potential return, but you have a little bit of risk on a year-to-year basis. Or if you say, you know what, I am going to work until 70, it's 13 years away, I wouldn't even mind putting it all into a diversified stock portfolio or a mutual fund, ETF, something to grow over the next 13 years, but that has volatility in it. So it depends a little bit on you, how much risk you're willing to take, and some other things. But I would not do it on an income annuity yet. I don't think that they're for you yet, and especially not with 100% of your portfolio.
Right. Yeah. I signed up from 2008 that I'm a little chicken.
Okay. And that's why I mentioned the index annuity or the structured product, so that it has either total downside protection, like an index annuity, or some downside protection, like a structured product. And so I think with your time horizon, the structured product is probably going to be one of your better bets. But again, I'm not sure I would do 100%. I wouldn't do 100% there either. I may do, you've got 70,000. I may do 40 of it there and 30 of it into an actual growth portfolio.
To give you a little bit more juice.
More juice. Sam.
Yeah. I'll tell you what, Maria, do you have any other questions?
Yes, I have one more question.
Okay, go ahead.
If I may.
Yes.
I have $300 extra that I would like either to, pay it toward my mortgage extra, toward the principal, or put it toward the deferred compensation. Which one do you think is best?
So you have $200 a month to save. How large is your mortgage?
It's $250,000.
$250,000? I would not put it into the mortgage. What's the interest rate on your mortgage?
It's 3.75.
Yeah. I mean, if you put an extra $200 against the mortgage each month, instead of being 28 years from now to be paid off, it may be paid off in 23, 25 years, maybe 25 years. You're still going to have a mortgage when you retire. It's still a long-term time horizon. I think that taking that $200 and putting it into either deferred comp or to a Roth IRA for the next 13 years will give you a much better potential return than the cost of the 3.75 or call it the 4% mortgage that you've got. And so I think you're going to have the mortgage payment in retirement anyway. Let's see if we can build up a bigger pool of money to enjoy our lives with and maybe have some extra money to pay down at that time rather than forcing it all into the mortgage right now. If you were going to say I could put an extra, $5,000 a month against it, yeah, pay it against the mortgage, because then the mortgage will be gone in 5 years, 3 years. But with only $200 a month more on a $250,000 mortgage, it's not going to cut the time by that much. And over the time horizon that the mortgage is there, I think you'll do a lot better saving and investing the $200 a month for the next 8-10 years.
Okay, perfect.
Okay, I'll tell you what, if Maria, hold on. I can get you some more information on what Professor Plum was just talking about on either the structured product or the
index
annuity. So hold on a second, if you would. We can get some information from you. I think it would be helpful to go over it with her. A couple of different questions here. Obviously, we can talk more about what the structured product that you were talking about. With regard to the mortgage, and I hear that a lot from not necessarily advisors, but I read it a lot, where if you have any extra money at all debt is bad. Your biggest debt is usually your mortgage. If you've got that extra $200, $300, or whatever it is per month, you should just go ahead and put it toward the mortgage, because you're going to be cutting down on a whole bunch of interest on the back end. Professor, they never seem to bring up the fact that you're really not cutting it down all that much.
No, in fact, I'm just doing a little bit of quick calculation.
Yeah, with regard to how much...
If she was starting from scratch
at 30 years
on a 3.75% mortgage, it would cut the mortgage down by about 6 or 7 years. And so it does cut it, nicely.
The $200 a month, you're saying.
Right, the $200 a month.
If she adds an extra $200 a month toward the principal.
And if she did it for the next 22, 23 years, she's not going to be able to do it for the next 22, 23 years. She's only going to be able to do it for the next 10 years or so. So it's still going to be a 25-year mortgage.
Yes.
Or I don't know how far into it she is right now. So I think that over the next 10 years while she's doing that, now, if she went back to her original mortgage payment, and I'll give you the math right after the break and why I think it makes sense.
Okay, good. A lot of the conventional advice, as I said, tells you always put your money toward the mortgage. Always do this or always do that. Well, we don't believe in that here. Each individual situation is different. That's why we take your calls and your emails and we answer them on an individual basis. Okay, more coming up. 877-PLANNER. Still some lines open. Three lines open. Get them while you can. 877-PLANNER. It is Bucket Strategy Investing. Bucket Strategy Investing. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, 877 Planner. We got some lines open right now, so get on board with your questions. We're here to help you out with a calculator in hand, as we're going to do here in just a couple of seconds. Some more things to say about this particular mortgage that we were talking with our previous caller, Maria, about. So hold on for that. I do want to remind you, though, that if you want to meet the Brain Trust, Professor Plum specifically, Terry Keyes, whom you also see on this program from time to time, and the local advisors, wherever you happen to be, they're going to be putting on some more workshops, the Lucia Capital Group 2016 Retirement Income Strategies Workshops. They're happening all across the country, and they may be in a city where you are right now. So the best thing to do is to check wealthed.com, our website, wealth, W-E-A-L-T-H, wealthed.com, at the live events tab. Find out where the Brain Trust is going to be. And if it's anywhere close, I said before, within 500 miles, I think it's worth driving or flying in, whatever. Sign up for that workshop. It's all free. You can get the best in money information, get your money questions answered. Not only learn about retirement income strategies and the challenges therein, but also get whatever money question that is on your mind, you get that answered in person by the Brain Trust. So again, go to wealthed.com to sign up. They are all free. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. So before the break, we were talking to Maria. She had an extra $200 a month. This is her second question besides the pension, right, which I also want to cover. But she had an extra $200 a month. Her question was, does she put that toward the mortgage, or does she put this toward her, I think it was her deferred compensation plan.
Right, or some other
or something
form of savings.
Else,
yes.
Correct. Now, you had suggested that $200 a month probably on the mortgage isn't going to make a whole lot of difference. What sort of math have we done on this?
Well, I was just playing with different math. So assuming a $250,000 new 30-year mortgage, I don't know how many years into it hers was, so we're not going to go there. And if she was only going to work for, and I just said for another 10 years. And a lot of people do this so that they can cut the time horizon for the mortgage. And it will cut the time horizon, but does it matter in this case? So instead of her normal payment, she pays an extra $200 a month. And so if she had just paid her normal payment on this $250,000 brand new 3.75% loan, the remaining balance 10 years from now is about $195,000. If she put the extra $200 a month into the mortgage, the remaining balance 10 years from now is $166,000 and change. There's about a $29,000 difference in the balance of the mortgage 10 years from now. She owes less money. But now she wants to retire. What's her payment? Her payment's the same payment either way. And if she continues to make the payment, the mortgage will be paid off earlier if she put that extra money into it. It'll be paid off 4 years earlier than otherwise retired. So starting at age 57, the mortgage is paid off at age 82 instead of 86, 87. I still have the same payment, though, for the majority of my retirement. Now, instead of putting the $200 a month into the mortgage, maybe I put it into a Roth IRA or the deferred comp, and I put it into a more growth-oriented investment, taking advantage of dollar cost averaging and doing all that wonderful stuff that may lead to a better rate of return. I just have to beat 3.7. I don't have to do anything. She just has to beat 3.75% earnings to have the same effect as she would by putting it into the mortgage. Let's say she could earn 5%. Over a 10-year period of time, dollar cost averaging into the market, 6%, 7%. Even during the lost decade, you would have been able to do a 4 or 5% rate of return, most likely, with dollar cost averaging over that period of time, because the market went down, went up, went down, went up, and mm-hmm. that helps. Even though it ended very close to the same point that it started, you made money on the dollar cost averaging side of it. So let's say she did 7%. So at the end of 10 years, even though the mortgage is not the $29,000 lower mortgage she had before, she's got $35,000, $34,000 in an account that she can do whatever she wants with. She can pay it into the mortgage at that time if she wants, especially if it's a Roth IRA, or not. And if she does that, she'll even have a lower mortgage. Or she, so depending on what she wants to do. The other thing that we like is she has access to that money. If she wants to pay,
That's what I like about it.
If she wants to enjoy her life earlier, while she's young enough to enjoy it, she has access to money. And what did it do to her cash flow for the first 12 years, 13 years of retirement? Nothing. Her cash flow, her mandatory cash flow is the exact same either way. It's only in the mid-80s where the cash flow is different. And if you've done something with that $30,000-plus, you probably have the money to handle with that. I will take my chance with a dollar-cost averaging aspect of the market over a 10-plus-year period of time when my bogey to beat is 3.75%. That's my opinion. Hers may be different, but...
So again, to just summarize here, she could put the $200 a month into the mortgage and have after 10 years, because that's as long as she's going to do it, she's going to have $29,000 lower mortgage than if she had just paid whatever her minimum was.
So if she sells the house at that point, she's got $29,000 more in her pocket.
Right. But if she had taken that $200 a month and put it into some sort of savings vehicle, where over 10 years, let's say it was 5%.
She has to earn 3.75 or better.
Which is entirely
reasonable.
Possible.
I mean, I think it's doable, especially on the dollar cost averaging.
Sure. But even if she didn't, let's say it's all she could earn was a 3.75%. She's still got $29,000 extra that she could put toward the mortgage.
Yeah, she still has the 29 if that's the case.
But the difference here is she's got it. It's not. She doesn't have to go to the bank to borrow it if she needs the 29 grand.
And we've been talking about interest rates potentially going up for quite a while now, and they haven't. But what if they do? And you can get back to CDs that pay 4%, 5%.
Over the next 10 years, it could happen.
Who knows? But I just don't want to pay that mortgage off. I mean, now, if she could pay it off over the next 5 years, that's a different game, because I don't think you can earn 3.75% over a five-year period of time. But a 22, 23-year period of time, yeah, I think you can do 3.75.
Yeah.
I'm not guaranteeing it, but I think you can.
These are different strategies that we often talk about. And in fact, here we go again. This is going to be another one of the topics that we're going to be covering during our first hour sometime over the next week or two, with regard to paying off your mortgage or perhaps taking that money and putting it inside a Roth IRA. It's the Roth versus mortgage strategy that we've talked about before. It can be helpful to people who are trying to decide, like Maria, what do I do? Do I put my money toward the mortgage? Because part of the problem, not that it's always a bad thing, but part of the problem when you put your money toward your mortgage, you're giving it to the bank. If for some reason you need to get that money back, as many people often do, need to access that money, that's savings to you. You have to borrow it from the bank. If you put it towards your mortgage, you still got to borrow it. If you keep it yourself in a Roth IRA and allow it to perhaps earn greater, then you at least have access to that money.
And I do look at it, though, as an investment decision. The cost to do something other than paying down the mortgage, in this case, was 3.75%. Over the expected lifetime of the payment that I'm going to have with my mortgage, can I achieve a rate of return equal to or greater than the cost? Well, unfortunately, when people talk about, you know, paying off your mortgage early, you're going to save $30,000, $40,000, $50,000 in interest, but they never talk about what you could have earned on the money in the meantime that you weren't putting into the mortgage to pay it off early. So as long as I believe I can earn more over the similar time horizon that the mortgage is going to continue, I'm going to invest. If I don't think I can earn more over the time horizon that the mortgage is going to be in place, with the extra money involved, then I'm going to pay off the mortgage. And that's why I say if I can have it gone in 3 or 4 or 5 years, it's almost impossible to earn a guaranteed 3.75% over 5 years. I think it's a reasonable goal to do it over 26 years. So it's all a matter of what is my time horizon? What is my bogey? What is my interest rate hurdle? What is my cost hurdle? In her case, it's a 23-year time horizon and a 3.75% hurdle. Can I earn better than 3.75% over that 23-year period of time? I think you can.
I would think you can. It's been known to happen. Let's put it that way.
More times than not.
That's right. 877-PLANNER, our number, PLANNER. If you have money questions, you can get on board right now. 877-752-6637. One byproduct of having these low interest rates is to me, it almost answers a question that people have, which is, should I pay off the mortgage? To me, the money is cheap enough right now that I'm not necessarily going to be pushing and fighting to pay down this mortgage unless it really, really makes sense from a financial or psychological standpoint.
But that's also why it does make sense to pay off the credit cards that are 15, 16, 19, sometimes higher in interest rates. Because can you invest anywhere and earn that potential rate of return. Not potential, that guarantee, because the interest rate you're paying is a guaranteed cost. Can you beat that cost?
Yeah, if you have a 19.9% credit card and you're now paying that off, let's say you owed $5,000 and you had an extra $5,000, you've now paid it off. In essence, Professor Plum, you've actually just earned 19.9% by not having to pay that interest later on.
As long as you're not continuing to reborrow against the credit card.
Let's assume that you're not.
It's a great way to create cash flow. By reducing your expenses, paying off debt, you're creating a more efficient cash flow. And that's what we're all trying to accomplish, either by saving enough money that it creates cash flow or getting rid of expenses that I don't have to have the cash flow to create, to meet.
Exactly. All right, we got more coming up. We got some emails, your phone calls too. We got lines open. You want to get in touch with the Brain Trust, you do so right now, 877-PLANNER, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum are coming right back. Johnny Dean, Professor Rick Plum, taking care of business with you here on the program as we do every day, 877-752-6637. Coming up tomorrow on this program, boy, these are just some great topics, and this is another one that we haven't talked about for a little while here, and that has to do with the keys to a successful estate plan, some of the things that you need to know about. We touched on it just very briefly earlier this week, but we're going to make it an entire topic for at least for a couple of segments on tomorrow's program. What do you need? You've heard of wills, trusts, probate. What does that mean? Who should inherit what assets? This could go any number of about 50 different directions. So we will talk about that tomorrow on this program during the first hour. 877-PLANNER, our number, P-L-A-N-N-E-R. Also, trivia for today, I have this one. This from the Social Security Administration, 2.8% of America's working age population was receiving Social Security disability benefits in 1994. 2.8. What is it today? It is now 5.1% of working age population getting Social Security disability benefits. I don't know, did they change the criteria for disability, or we just have more people?
They changed the criteria.
Do you recall what it is, what it was then? And
yeah, what it was back in the 90s, and when I first started this in the 80s, to get a Social Security disability benefit, they went by the strictest definition, and it said that you had to be unable to perform any gainful occupation, and whatever the disability one was expected to remain forever or lead to death. I mean, it was a very strict disability definition. They've loosened that, and they've actually had some judges that have been almost rubber stamping almost any application that went through. So they've loosened it up to almost a what they would call an own occupation. Any job that you could potentially do with your training. And so somebody who is trained one way, mm-hmm. they're not even saying that we can retrain you in some respects, that you could reinvent yourself to try to do something else, that the disability is not that the disability is temporary, but the setback is temporary, where you could learn to do something else and make it and make a living. So they've changed the way that they look at the disability over the years. Back in the day, back in the 80s and 90s, it was not easy to get a disability benefit from Social Security. Now it's not easy, but still easier.
Well, I think it should be easier because, frankly, the people who I know what they were trying to do. They're trying to weed out the people who really weren't disabled and all that stuff. But what that was doing was creating a big, big problem for people who did
needed the benefit.
Absolutely needed the benefit.
You'd hear about the stories about the person who went out on disability and then 2 years later they're out playing tennis, they're doing all these other things, and they're going to get their benefit. But then somebody who's another person who's very disabled couldn't get on the system. They couldn't do anything, and they were basically living in poverty because they couldn't get the disability benefit. So, there's benefits and drawbacks on letting anybody have it or letting nobody have it.
And we did see a spike, I don't remember how big.
In 2009.
In 2008, 2009, 2010, of people who, frankly, were just, in dire need of some income.
Right.
And There were ways. I mean, I'm not saying they were all legitimate or illegitimate. It doesn't matter. But we did see a spike. I think when people decide that, you know, they can't get a job, when times are tough, they're going to turn to something like Social Security disability and see if they can't get some money to get by on.
Well, especially if they're, you know, in that late 50, early 60 range.
Yep.
If they can find a way to qualify as a disabled. And I think some of the disability issues, too, is because the fact that we recognize more cognitive issues for disability than we ever did in the 80s and 90s.
Yes.
And so there's a lot more people with emotional and mental disabilities that just weren't they didn't have that definition. They didn't recognize that back in, you know, the 80s and the 90s, back in the dark ages of those issues, that they're now recognizing more emotional issues as a disability, which they are.
Yeah, which I think is a good thing. Okay, 877-PLANNER, if you have we only got a couple minutes left. I wanted to get to an email here. If you want to email us, it's at wealthed.com. Gus in Denton, Texas, regarding indexed annuities with guaranteed lifetime income as part of retirement income. We are 71. We're retiring in 2 years. If we start lifetime guaranteed income on such an annuity for 25% of our income, is this sufficient?
Efficient.
Or efficient. I was thinking he meant sufficient, but it does say efficient. Or does this approach require more time to build up the annuity?
Well, unfortunately, I think it's not the time to build up the annuity. It's the time to pay out the annuity that is becoming in jeopardy. If you're not going to start this until you're 73 years of age, unfortunately, the payout period is not that long. There's a sweet spot, in my opinion, for starting the income on one of these annuities. And even though the insurance companies make it seem like the longer you wait, the better life is, well, that's true for them. The longer you wait to turn the income on, the better it is for them because they get to take fees for a longer period of time, and they have a much less chance of ever having to actually pay out any of the benefit from their money. So the sweet spot, in my opinion, for turning these benefits on are between 65 and 70. Because once you get past 70, 71, 73 in this case, your life expectancy, unless you tell me that your parents are still alive at 95 and playing tennis every day doing great, you're going to make it to 100 years old. The payout isn't long enough to make this work. It is a longevity play. And the longer you wait to turn it on, the less, by definition, your longevity is going to be. Now, insurance companies years ago realized that the longer they could postpone your taking money out of the portfolio, the less likely the cash value of the portfolio would be depleted. And so they put these automatic roll-ups every year. The income base gets larger, even if the cash value doesn't. Even if that cash value goes down, every year you wait to take income, it goes up. And by that definition, you should wait until you're 90 years old to start taking income from this. Because look at what the income base does every year. It gets bigger every year. Why would I want to take it now at 65, 68, 70, when the income base is going to be greater when I'm 80? Because frankly, when you're 80, how many years are you going to be able to take an income from it? 10? 15? The rate of return just is not in your favor. Because remember, the first X number of years that you're taking an income off of one of these guaranteed income benefit riders is coming from your cash value. The insurance company doesn't actually have to pay out anything as a guarantee until your cash value has been depleted. And so if you've got a cash value that you're taking a 5% distribution on, the insurance company has no chance of running out of money in the cash value until 20 years goes by.
And if they keep your money longer, then they've got even more time.
But each year, they're charging you a percentage of the income base, not the cash value, the income base, so that they can guarantee that that unlikely occurrence that they have to pay out is covered.
It's not that it's a bad thing. You just have to know what it is you're buying. Okay, we're out of time. If you have questions on this or anything else and you want to talk to Professor Rick Plum off the air or any of the advisors at Lucia Capital Group, their phone number is off the air, 800-644-1150, 800-644-1150. For Professor Rick Plum, I'm Johnny Dean. This is Bucket Strategy Investing.
Information presented should not be considered specific tax, legal, or investment advice. You should always seek counsel of the appropriate advisor prior to making any investment decision. All investments are subject to risk, including the loss of principal. There is no guarantee that any investing or financial planning strategy will be profitable, provide protection from loss, or meet its stated objectives. Investment advisor representatives of Lucia Capital Group are also registered representatives of and offer securities through Lucia Securities, LLC, a registered broker-dealer, member FINRA, SIPC. John Dean is an associated person with Lucia.
Chia Securities, LLC. In the information presented, the opinions and views expressed are subject to change without notice and may not come to pass. Registration with the SEC does not imply a certain level of skill or training.